Skies are overcast. It's 36 degrees. In Indiana, Indianapolis reporting overcast skies and 42 degrees. In Evansville, hazy sunshine, it's 49 there. Overcast and 43 in Fort Wayne, and in Terre Haute, clear skies and 41 degrees. At Willard Airport in Champaign, skies are overcast. It's 38 degrees, the dew point 34. Winds are calm for the moment. The humidity 86%, the barometric pressure 30.04 inches and falling. And outside our studios on Friends Plaza in Urbana, it's 37 degrees. You're listening to the Afternoon Magazine on WILL AM 580. I'm Craig Cohen. Our technical director is Jason Croft. Lawmakers head back to Springfield in a couple of weeks to try and tackle the state's massive pension crisis. Illinois' retirement systems have unfunded liabilities of at least $95 billion and climbing. This week, we will explore the history and the future of the pension problem. Today, Illinois Public Radio's Alex Keefe tries to figure out how things got so bad in the first place.
Thank you.
Last Thursday night, 57-year-old Dick Ingram, a bald guy in a dark suit, stepped onto the stage in a cramped, muggy auditorium at a South Suburban high school.
Thank you all for being here tonight. I really appreciate it.
Ingram is in charge of Illinois' biggest pension fund, called the Teachers' Retirement System. It's arguably worse off than any state pension fund in Illinois, which is saying something, considering Illinois has the worst-funded pensions in the country. So as he talks to a few hundred working and retired teachers tonight, people who are counting on a state pension, Ingram says some things that seem to really freak them out.
I don't think it's any secret that finances in the state of Illinois are a train wreck. We face the possibility and the real likelihood of insolvency.
Not everybody appreciates his candor.
Mr. Ingram, you have repeatedly shaken the confidence of thousands, many thousands of retirees who depend on...
Now, if you stop and think about what's going on here, it's pretty crazy. The teachers' retirement system alone has $52 billion worth of obligations it can't afford right now. That's billion, with a B. And if you count the pension funds for all state workers, that number nearly doubles. So how did Illinois get here? When you ask pension experts, watchdog groups, even politicians, they all agree the story is not primarily about gold-plated benefits for state workers or people gaming the system. It's because, basically, Illinois wanted a pension system but didn't want to pay for it. To explain how this all went down for decades, I'm going to need a piggy bank. Now, our Illinois pension piggy bank, let's call it, gets its money from three sources. State workers, like teachers and prison guards, they contribute right out of their paychecks. Then the people in charge of the pension funds, guys like Dick Ingram, they invest the money and put the earnings back into the piggy bank. And finally, the employer, in this case state government, throws in its share. Except that last part? Not so much.
Well, in terms of a piggy bank, it's a case of never quite putting in enough money into the piggy bank.
Sandor Goldstein is a public pension actuary, arguably the public pension actuary when it comes to Illinois' retirement systems. Now, you could think of an actuary as an accountant with a crystal ball. They use statistics to try and project how much stuff is going to cost 10, 20, 30 years down the road, stuff like retirement benefits. But in Illinois, the governors and state lawmakers who decide how much money to put into the pension piggy bank have been ignoring guys like Goldstein for a long, long time.
I have some reports from these pension commissions that complain about the underfunding back as early as 1945.
Wait, you have some of those reports?
Yes, I do.
Can we see one?
Goldstein heads over to the bookshelf in his office, plucks out a faded paperback report, and opens it up.
Probably, I think page 9. I think I found something right here. I see something that's called insufficiency of revenue. So
there's actually a whole stack of these reports from something called the State Pension Laws Commission. And if you could stomach the wonky language, you'll find that the commission didn't just sound the alarm about pensions in 1945. They did it again and again, all through the 50s.
This commission is deeply concerned in respect to the character of many existing pension laws in this state.
And then again through the 60s.
Can Bobby Of principal concern to the commission is the accumulation of large, unfunded, accrued liabilities resulting from...
And they were still sounding the alarm in the 70s.
Yet the pension obligation still remains almost wholly obscured or ignored by some public officials.
Have you just been, like, screaming yourself hoarse at governors for 3 decades saying, hello?
No, I haven't been doing that because our job is more of a technical one. It becomes a political issue after a while, and there's little we could do about that.
The politics of shorting the pension piggy bank are pretty easy to figure out.
Part of the reason was people in the state didn't want to pay more in taxes.
Former Republican Governor Jim Edgar argues the state has never taken in enough revenue to cover its costs. But he admits when he came into office in 1990 with a big budget shortfall, he was more concerned about things like education than, say, things like pensions. A few years later, with the economy looking up, he finally turned his attention toward the piggy bank. And, oh yeah, it happened to be an election year.
Good evening, and welcome to this year's first and only televised debate between the candidates for governor of Illinois.
The 1994 governor's race pitted Edgar against Democratic state comptroller Dawn Clark Netsch. And back when she was a state senator a few years earlier, Netsch had been one of the few Illinois politicians who actually tried to do something about the pension problem.
I swear I remember the number of the bill. Senate Bill 22.
Netsch says her bill would have given Illinois the very thing all those actuaries had been clamoring about since 1945, an honest-to-goodness payment plan to get the pension piggy bank back on track.
I always thought it was one of the less sexy but most important things I did at that time.
Netsch's law was pretty much ignored, but Edgar says he still didn't want her to bring up the issue during the 94 campaign. So just a few months before the election, he pushed through a funding plan of his own, the funding plan Illinois still uses today. It's sometimes called the pension ramp, and if you put it into a graph, it does kind of look like a skateboard ramp. On the left side, the state's payments start to climb gradually over 15 years. That's the easy part. But as you move to the right, it starts to get really steep, with payments growing more every year, which is where we are right now. Today, critics accuse Edgar of kicking the can down the road. That's not how he remembers it.
I don't think we kicked the can down. I disagree with that. We did far more than had been done for the previous 30, 40 years.
He did not live up to what I think was a golden opportunity.
Dawn Clark Netsch is still a critic, but you can't blame Illinois' pension nightmare on Jim Edgar alone. Through the 2000s, there were recessions, budget shenanigans, and skimpy contributions from the state. Still, actuaries, like the guy we heard from earlier, they say Edgar's plan was flawed from the get-go. They say it sets payments artificially low, and the plan only hits a 90% funding level, so it would never even fill the whole piggy bank. All of this means the unfunded liability is 6 times what it was in 1999, and it's only growing. So now politicians and labor unions are talking about possible fixes. And that brings us back to where we started, with those teachers at the town hall meeting who are wondering, what's taking so long?
I'm looking around, why isn't everybody mad about it? It was in the 90s.
And despite all the facts and figures, this is the one question Dick Ingram, the head of that teacher's pension fund, doesn't really have an answer for.
To your point about it's been this way for a long time and why weren't people madder earlier, I really wish that that had been so because I think you'd be less ticked off at me today.
But Ingram seems to take this all in stride. He says he's used to being the messenger who gets shot.
All you can do is tell the truth as you see it, and you know that'll sort itself out over time.
Exactly how Illinois' pension mess might get sorted out and how much time that will take, we'll hear more about that tomorrow. I'm Alex Keefe.
Today's broadcast is made possible with support from these business partners: Woodyard Allen Farm, Ridge Farm, Ray's Heating and Air Conditioning, Urbana, and Prairie Ridge Farms Incorporated, Allerton. These business partners join the friends of WILL in making great programs possible. Thank you.
And here is the Writer's Almanac for Wednesday. It's the 19th of December, 2012. It was on this day, 1843, Charles Dickens' story, A Christmas Carol, was published. He had written the book in 6 weeks. He needed the money. He had a large mortgage payment. His parents and siblings were begging for money. His wife was expecting their fifth child, and the sales of his most recent novel, Martin Chuzzlewit, were disappointing. So he rushed through A Christmas Carol in time to get it printed up for the holiday season. He decided to publish it himself, and he designed the book to have a gold-stamped cover, woodcuts, four hand-colored etchings, a fancy binding, gilt-edged pages, title pages in red and green, hand-colored green endpapers. He decided the green wasn't bright enough, so he did the endpapers in red and blue instead. It went on sale on December the 19th. It cost 5 shillings. It was a big bestseller. First edition, 6,000 copies, sold out by Christmas Eve. But he had priced the book too low for such a handsome edition, and so he made much less from that first run than he expected to, just about £200. He was hoping for 1,000. It's the birthday of Edith Piaf, born in Paris, 1915. Her mother was a cafe singer. Her father was a street performer, acrobat, contortionist. As a girl, she was sent to her grandmother's brothel, where she was raised by prostitutes. She became an international singing star with songs like La Vie en Rose and Non, je ne regrette rien. Died at the age of 47. 40,000 mourners joined her funeral procession in Paris. It's the birthday of Maria Sandford, born in Saybrook, Connecticut, 1836. She became one of the first female college professors in the country. She was the first woman to deliver a commencement speech at a university. She taught at the University of Minnesota, where on her 80th birthday, someone gave a speech that described her as vehement and gusty, leonine, hale, and lusty. And it was on this day in 1776 that Thomas Paine's The American Crisis was published in pamphlet form in Philadelphia. He wrote it to try to raise morale on the colonial side. His pamphlet that begins, "These are the times that try men's souls. The summer soldier and the sunshine patriot will in this crisis shrink from the service of their country. But he that stands it now deserves the love and thanks of man and woman." Here's a poem for today by Donald Hall entitled Apples, Peaches, based on an old jump rope rhyme, "Apples, peaches, pumpkin pie, how many years until I die?" "Hostess, Twinkies, Wonder Bread, how many springs until I'm dead? Plague and pestilence,